Scripture says that the people were astounded at Jesus' teaching, because he didn't teach like their scribes, but as one having authority. What made Jesus' teaching so different? Welcome to The Good Word. This quarter we are discussing the wonder of Jesus. My conversation partners are again Paul Dibdahl and Larry Waverka. Welcome. My name is Alden Thompson, and we're discussing the wisdom of Jesus' teachings. So let's go to the first question. After recording the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew declares that the people were astounded. Mark doesn't have the sermon, but he makes the same statement about the effect of Jesus' teaching in the synagogue. He taught with authority, not like their scribes. So, how did Jesus pull that off? How did he speak with authority and not like the scribes?
If my understanding of those who were learned in the matters of theology, and particularly understanding the law and its applications, were very keen to demonstrate that knowledge by being able to cite authority. People who had expounded on these ideas and became part of a very large unwritten or oral corpus of tradition, and your ability to make those citations and repeat that so-and-so says this and this and this really was how one claimed to being erudite, informed, and so on. It's kind of like today, someone going around and quoting C.S. Lewis whenever he wants to make a spiritual point. It's using this is not funny, Paul. It's making the point that you're wanting to make. It's giving it the kind of emphasis and credibility that such a name is associated with.
It would be like a Lutheran citing Luther, or a Methodist citing Wesley, or Adventist maybe citing James White, Ellen White.
Well, sure.
And H.M.S. Richard Sr.
Well, and Adventists have done that for years, haven't we? If we can give a quote from Ellen White, then people are to take us seriously and listen up when we do this. So, and it's interesting that if we can support what we're saying by something from the Red Books, then we think we have credibility in a way that we don't standing by ourselves. But Jesus says, "You've heard it said, but I say to you."
And he doesn't quote a single Jewish rabbi.
Yeah.
That's what's so astonishing about his Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
And I think, too, that there are just some people who, when they speak, it's not something we could define, but there are some people who speak with authority. From the time they begin, you listen to them in a way that you wouldn't listen to someone else. And I think Jesus must have had that ability. We want to call it charisma or whatever it was. When he spoke, people listened. And we all know of people in our own experience who are like that. For us.
I remember when I came as a brand new faculty member here and go to my first faculty meeting. And you don't know who the powerhouses are. But it doesn't take very long before when a particular faculty member speaks, you know, everything just gets a little bit quiet.
Yes.
And this is the final word. And I know, in some cases, committees are people who didn't say very much. But when they did speak, you know, it seems to me that, and everybody just rolled over and played dead. That was almost the end of the conversation.
And there are some people who, when they do say whatever they're going to say, it's impressive. It's right. It has the ring of this makes sense. And they do unravel and solve things whenever they share whatever wisdom it is they have on the subject. And I think Jesus really had that kind of insight and presence when he said things.
Now, let's go to the specifics of the Sermon on the Mount. And we can't talk about all of them, but how does the Sermon on the Mount compare with the truths that you find in the Old Testament, with the wisdom of world religions? Is it brand new truth? Is it old truth presented with fresh paint? How would you describe the overall quality of Jesus' teaching compared to other sources of truth?
Oh, boy, I don't feel particularly qualified to answer that. I guess I would say it is less some brand new truth. I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's just old truth presented with fresh paint. But certainly what Jesus says is not just out of the blue. I think there are connections with what has right. come before. The kind of deepening righteousness, we might say, oh, well, that's in contrast to the Old Testament. I don't think that's the case at all. The Lord has always been interested in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a continuity here, and maybe it's a kind of repackaging, but certainly, you know, in continuity with what has come before in the Hebrew Scriptures.
Could we say that Jesus organizes it with greater clarity? If you come from an authoritarian system, the Old Testament certainly is more authoritarian. You tend not to make hierarchies and distinguish some things are more important than others. Now, you could be very blunt in talking with God in the Old Testament, but you had to be pretty careful what you said to Joshua or Moses. You could get yourself in difficulty. But when Jesus gives his two great commands, it's often been pointed out, love God with all your heart. That's from the Old Testament.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The second one, love your neighbor as yourself, is there in the Old Testament, but it's buried in a whole bunch of laws, and so it doesn't stand out. Jesus brings these out and said, this is the first command, and this is the second command. Or in Matthew 7:12, he says, treat others the way you want to be treated. This is the law and the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you might say that Jesus articulates it with greater clarity, maybe organizes it and focuses it in ways that the Old Testament does not.
Yeah, Jesus uses the metaphor of new wine and old wineskins and the need for new pliable wineskins to contain the whole of it in ways that it doesn't fracture it or burst it. But what I see him doing is, I think, what Paul was describing as extending the understanding, extending the application, making it live, making it walk in a way that had been sort of plasticized or, you know, contained in ways that that he really provided an expansion in doing, and moving into the realm where this is unconditional love and this is how it operates, which is a very powerful part of what he was doing.
Now, as we look at the New Testament, and you alluded to this, Paul, but let me come back at it from another way. Jesus was not afraid to contrast his way with the Old Testament. You have heard, but I say to you. And in each case, he takes an external command or an external behavior in the Old Testament and internalizes it. Murder is wrong, but murderous anger is. And so he's not afraid to make those kinds of contrasts. And if that's the case, what does he teach us about God that's so remarkable? I mean, he is contrasting. He claims to be God. He claims the God of the Old Testament as his God. But in some ways, the New Testament says he is better. He is clearer. Hebrews, the first chapter, first verse. You know. And if his way is better, how do we deal with that and make it a consistent revelation if Jesus' way is better, if he is the better and clearer revelation?
Again, I'm not exactly sure where you're heading with this, but from my perspective, to see God as a God who works with people where they are,
mm-hmm.
is the beauty. That when you see those, that kind of development, if we can use that mm-hmm. term, instead of frightening us, that to me gives me a great deal of hope that God can meet me then where I am, and certainly not leave me there. But that there's a process, a journey that he's willing to lead me on toward greater understanding, greater clarity, not just understanding, but a better way of life, too.
Now, I scare some people when I say this, but I would say that the violence of the Old Testament attributed to God is simply God using a language that violent people understand. And if one can take that approach, then I come to the conclusion that the God of the Old Testament is fully as patient as we see in Jesus Christ. If he is willing to take that kind of risk and adapt to those kinds of customs, then the God that we serve is not one with a short fuse. It's one who is incredibly daring mm-hmm. as he reaches people with his great patience. Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think it's really easier, though, to read that back into the view of God that the Hebrew Scriptures portray after the experience of Jesus, because Jesus gives me a picture of what God would be like if he were a human being living here among us. Mm-hmm. And that's just incredible to me, and it puts a different perspective then as I read back and understand mm-hmm. these stories.
I think it's very difficult for people who live in a violent world to actually understand the patience and gentleness of God. It's only when you grow past that and look back and see it, then you realize where you've come from.
Well, there are some times where you want a gentle and a patient God, and then sometimes you want a God who's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that God can operate in both of those settings in mm-hmm. in more than satisfactory ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have just a few moments left. Let's go to that famous passage where Jesus responds to the request by James and John to have number one and number two positions. In Matthew chapter 20, verses about 25 to 27, Jesus' answer is amazing. He says, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It will not be so among you. Whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Is there any place in the New Testament where you can remember where Jesus demanded to be worshipped?
No, not right off.
I don't think there is any. That's the astonishing thing. You see, he wins their worship. He never demands it. See, and that's what is such a contrast between the two. And ultimately, which then becomes the basis for all of us, we are all on level ground. See, even though we may have different gifts, we relate to one another as fellow Christians. The ground is level at the base of the cross. And if that's the case, then the wisdom of Jesus' teaching is just really quite astonishing. He models a shared experience, and he tells us that that's the model that applies to us just as well. And as we continue then to discuss this quarter, the different aspects of the wonder of Jesus, I hope we will keep that clearly in mind. Thank you, Larry and Paul, for your assistance, and to our program engineer, Josiah Hackerott, for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.